You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Dan Roebuck and John Hawksworth.
Hello and welcome to the Race to Dubai show as Matthew Fitzpatrick edges out Scott Hend in a nail-biting playoff to win the Omega European Masters.
6 under in the final round, lowest round of the week for me, probably my lowest round in competition here, so to do it on a Sunday is always very special. So obviously got me back in contention and I had a real good chance winning in regular play, but I'm just delighted I managed to do it in the playoff.
And we'll speak exclusively to the Englishman later in the show. So it's successive second place finishes for Hend, who was disappointed to once again miss out on the trophy.
Yeah, I had my opportunity and I didn't take it, and that's what happens when you don't take your opportunity, so here's what it is. Fitzy played great, so good champion.
We'll look back at the best of the action from the Swiss mountains and also preview the KLM Open as the European Tour heads to the Netherlands. Hello, I'm Dan Roebuck, and today I'm pleased to be joined by former European Tour player John Hawksworth. John, how are you?
Good morning. I noticed you've grown a beard since I last saw you.
Yes, I have grown a beard, but I'm sure I've had it for the last time that we were on this podcast together. Maybe you just didn't notice. You just don't notice me anymore, John.
You look like you've been shipwrecked.
Matthew Fitzpatrick beat Scott Hend in a playoff after a thrilling final day battle to win his fourth European Tour title at the Omega European Masters. John, Matt is a special player, isn't he? 4 European Tour wins. Now.
He's a great player, 23 years of age, to have 4 wins. I remember his first win back at, it was the British Masters that he won at Woburn. But he was always promising, you know, he won the US Amateur and he was talked about, but there's a difference between talked about and coming out and producing. So to have 4 wins at 23, second Ryder Cup counting event again. So, of course, he'll want to be back at Paris National, which will be a big priority. And sometimes it seems to lift players, Ryder Cup counting points, they get into gear quickly and get in the zone. Feel a bit sorry for Scott Hend. 2 years running, he's lost in the playoff to Norrin last year. And, of course, this year to Matthew Fitzpatrick.
But he didn't make it easy for himself, Hend, because he bogeyed, 2 of the first 4 holes. And when Matt Fitzpatrick, who was out earlier, is ripping up the course, he birdies 6, 7 and 8, and then he birdies 14, 15, 16, and the pressure swings on Hend straight away, doesn't it?
Well, the first hole used to be a par 5. It is downhill back towards the valley, but it's a long way over 500 yards. 2's not easy, 3's not easy, 4's not easy, and you try and get through 4 holes in level, and you have a go at 5, 6, 7, 8, maybe 9, 10. They're the scoring holes after that, and then, as you say, into the back 9, 14, 15, 16 is a brutal par 3. 17 and 18 are birdie chances. 16 used to be a par 4. But he took his opportunities, Matt. Hend played well. I think he's a very streaky player. When he's on, he's brilliant. And sometimes he makes some careless mistakes. And obviously Fitzpatrick didn't.
They're two very different players in terms of how they approach the game. Scott Hend is massive off the tee.
Yeah, he is.
And there was a couple of holes that he was getting on the green in 2. There was a drivable par 4 as well. Matt Fitzpatrick, a completely different type of player, isn't he?
Well, he's not short, Fitzpatrick, but Hend is very long. I think he swings the club great, Scott Hend. He releases the club so well, gets through the ball, goes after everything. He's not a steerer or a prodder. Fitzpatrick, not as long, but that golf course doesn't lend itself to hitting it miles. It was redesigned by Seve a good few years ago, and you've got to plot your way around it. Yeah, there are opportunities to hit a long way, but I think it levelled people out.
Of course, Matt Fitzpatrick dropped a shot on the 17th hole. It gave Hend the opportunity to win the event in regulation, but he couldn't get the job done, so we were into a playoff. Mm. And Scott Hend had a great opportunity on the second playoff hole when he missed a 6-footer. I mean, Matt Fitzpatrick was watching that thinking, my chance has gone here, but for whatever reason, Scott Hend just couldn't get the job done. He said that his putting wasn't anything like as good the final day that it had been earlier on in the week. And when it comes to a playoff, you've got to putt well.
Well, yeah, it was down. That was a tough putt down the hill that Hend had to win. He hit it quite firmly, but it was one of those that you had to set online and hope it stayed online. He took some of the burrow out and tried to drill it, and it didn't work. And then the next playoff hole, he hit it in a bunker, didn't have a great lie.
Was he overly aggressive, do you think? Given that 18th hole is very difficult, and there's not too many birdies, or hardly any birdies on it over the course of the week.
No, it's the way he plays again. Fitzpatrick, I think it was the second playoff hole, laid back miles. He only made the fairway by about 20 yards and went in from about, I think it was about 185. Hend plays the game differently. He sees it as blast, blast, blast. But he pushed it in the trap, bad lie, over the back, chipped it down through the green, nearly went in the water, and made five. And Fitzpatrick in the end tapped him from about 18 inches to get his fourth win.
Has he got a bit of a fear factor, Matt Fitzpatrick, in terms of when you're lining up against him, you know what he's done, you know he's a young player, Scott Hend goes into that playoff, does he feel like he's second favourite, the Australian?
No, I don't think he thinks like that at all. He just plays the game slightly differently. He's attack, attack, attack. Sometimes it comes off, sometimes it doesn't. It was a bit like the tortoise and the hare. The tortoise had him in the end.
And Matt Fitzpatrick hadn't shown too much form this year, had he? Was second in the Nordea Masters. Where do you think this good four days came from?
Well, he's a class player. It only takes a shot for a guy to turn a tournament round where they get a feeling. He's a class player. As I said, he'd won three times before. He likes being up there. He's got a young swing, a young attitude, and he's fearless. And, you know, they can have lulls, these lads, and then suddenly they win.
Good reaction on social media, as you would imagine. Tommy Fleetwood said, well done, Matt Fitz, great playing, and youngest Englishman to win four times on tour is a fantastic achievement. Danny Willett said, so pleased for my pal Matt Fitzpatrick, brilliant performance. And Luke Donald, Matt Fitzpatrick, putting together an impressive resume already, and he's only 23. The future is bright, great playing, Matt. He's got a good reputation. He's well-liked on tour, isn't he?
He is, yeah. He's a popular lad. Gets on with everybody. Goes about his business. He's not one of those a little bit fiery and upsets people. And there he is. He's a winner again.
Well, I'm delighted to say we are now joined by the new Omega European Masters champion, Matt Fitzpatrick. Matt, congratulations. A four-time European Tour winner. The sixth youngest player to do so, behind the likes of Seve, Jose Maria Olazabal, Sandy Lyle, Sergio Garcia and Matteo Manassero. You must be proud.
Yeah, absolutely delighted, obviously, to sort of be in the same company as those names is very special, very special for me as well. And it was obviously another great week for me, and to achieve that is fantastic.
Coming into the tournament, did you feel a win was around the corner? You hadn't been playing particularly badly when I was looking at your numbers, but you weren't really challenging for top honours. Where did you think your form came from?
No, I mean, I had a bit of a team meeting a couple of weeks ago, and we sort of tried to put a few things in place that were a bit more constant in my processes, and sort of picking two or three drills, sticking to those ones, you know, really going for those ones, and then sort of reevaluating how I played in two, 3 months' time. So, you know, that was that's what we did, and obviously it's worked out a little quicker than we expected, but I'm just delighted. Obviously, it was obviously a goal of mine to get a win this year, and to do it up at the European Masters in Gran was fantastic.
So when did you think, Matt, that it was possibly going to be your day, that you were going to get this fourth win? Leaderboards on the golf course, were you aware of what's going on?
Pretty much the whole way round, you know. I knew I was supposed to score, and sort of birdie and two for me was the ideal start. I think if you're really going to get your day going, you've got to see the ball go in early in the round, and that's what happened. And made a couple of good par saves, some good putts, and got it going onwards from six, really. So just had a good run of holes there. Could have easily been four under at the turn, just missing a short one and nine. And so from then on, I felt like I could really challenge. Obviously, saw Scott was doing okay, but not pulling away, which was obviously good for myself. And just managed to keep it going.
Birdies on 14, 15, 16, but you dropped a shot on 17. I've seen one or two quotes that you said to your caddy, oh, I wonder if it's gone, but obviously you held your nerve.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, it's always a tough one to win in a playoff. You know, you do feel bad for the other guy, and it's a tough one to take. But for me, I felt like, I say, 17, I thought it might cost me. We sort of in between clubs and hit the wrong one at the time, but, it worked out in the end.
It's the first time you've won a European Tour event in a playoff. Were you confident when you stood back on that first playoff hole on the 18th tee?
I mean, it's always a tough one, you know. Obviously, Scott was in the position last year, so I'm sure he had a lot of experience from that. And like you say, it was my first ever playoff, so it was new to me too. But, you know, I think one thing I did have was obviously played really well in the day, so I was taking that momentum into the playoff and obviously hitting it nicely, so I think that helped me, definitely.
Scott missed out in a playoff last year, as you mentioned, against Alex Norum, but you went close in 2015 when Danny Willett won. You've got a good record there. It was one of your first events on tour, I think, wasn't it, back in 2014?
Yeah.
So you must like Cron.
I do, yeah. I love the place. You know, it's the golf course just seems to suit my eye. I love being here, and it's just a fantastic setup all around. It's one that's always straight on the schedule.
Lots of congratulations on Twitter for your good self, including from Thomas Bjorn. You've suddenly got a whole rake of Ryder Cup points. That's probably high on your priority list, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, I'm delighted to get off to a good start in that. And I think if I can obviously continue this form going into the end of the year and sort of really play well and just sort of have a good end to the year to basically keep at the top of the points. You know, obviously there's a heck of a long way to go still, but it's always good to get off a good start.
And just speaking of Twitter, legendary footballer Luis Figo said on Twitter, "Congratulations, my friend. Well done. Enjoy it. How come you two are best pals?"
It came through my first ever tournament win, actually. He messaged me on Twitter saying congratulations, and it sort of just went from there, really. And I got in touch with him, and we played golf a little bit now, and we've just become good friends. I'm obviously very lucky to have a friend like that.
Have you taken him to Bramall Lane yet?
Not yet. He clearly doesn't know what he's missing out on.
Great win for Sheffield United at the weekend. It was a perfect weekend for you, wasn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. It was perfect.
You mentioned that you just want to keep it going for the rest of the year. Obviously, your schedule's not going to change because you're one of the elite players on the European Tour anyway. But what does it give you going into the key events in the autumn, do you think? You said you wanted to get a win for the season. How much of a boost does it give you and your game?
Yeah, it really helps me and sort of almost gives me that confidence boost, you know, that I can almost go out and do it again before the end of the year. And then that would be a nice thing to do and achieve. But obviously, we'll see. You know, there's still some great players that are playing, and just got to sort of keep working hard and seeing what we can come up with.
Well, your hard work is paying off. We always enjoy watching you play. Congratulations once again, and all the very best for the remainder of the year.
Thank you very much.
Great to hear from Matt, a regular, of course, on the Race to Dubai show. Well, it was his fourth European Tour win in just under 2 years after the British Masters in 2015 and, of course, last year, the Nordea Masters and the DP World Tour Championship. And now, of course, he's a European Master as well. Two previous top 10 finishes before this win at Cron-sur-Sierre Golf Club, and he's now 12th in the Race to Dubai standings, up from 48th in the world rankings to 33rd. Everything going in the right direction for Matt Fitzpatrick.
Mm.
The trajectory is going well. Are we looking at a major maybe next year, year after? Which Grand Slam event do you think would be best suited to him?
One of his best chances would be the Masters. It's not a massive golf course, but you have to putt well, and he does putt very well. He's had signs that he can cope with Augusta. He's not got the job done yet, but don't forget, he's 23 years. To win a major is hard. But I would think Augusta will suit him at some stage.
To the rest of the leaderboard now, and Scott Hend was clearly disappointed to finish runner-up for the second year in a row.
Yeah, I had my opportunity and I didn't take it, and usually that's what happens when you don't take your opportunity, so that's the way it goes.
Obviously, it's been a long day today with you having to finish your third round, but just on that, I mean, it must have been nice to get off to such a positive start to the day.
I had a nice eagle. Yeah, that was good. So it was a good start this morning. Didn't play as nicely in the afternoon round as I wish I could have, but, it is what it is. 50 played great, so good champion.
Second yet again for the Australian. He's got to be gutted, hasn't he?
Well, yeah, but you've got to take the positives out. He's playing well. He's 44. Age is not on his side. Yeah, he's had a chance to win it, and he's lost 2 years running now to Fitzpatrick and then Norrin last year. But it's a good effort. He's played well around there. 64, 63, 71, 68. I think is very good scoring, because that is a tough, tricky little golf course. So you've got to take the positives out of it. His wife was canning for him, and he'll move on.
On to Tyrrell Hatton, who returned to form with third place, but the Englishman wasn't entirely happy with his performance.
For me personally, it was quite frustrating opening nine holes and sort of, lost my head a bit, which I keep doing. I make it difficult for myself, but I'm happy with how I finished, and, it's another good week here in Crons.
Just talking to your caddy there when he signed your card, and he said you've been hitting the ball really well this week. It's maybe just on the greens that it sort of let you down a little bit this week.
Yeah, I think so. My long game's been really good, apart from probably the final 10 holes in round two. I don't feel like I hold enough putts this week, and unfortunately that's what it's boiled down to. But it's a lot of positives for me. You know, I've been on a really bad run, and so it's nice to be up there again, and looking forward to 2 weeks off now, and hopefully can have a good strong end to the year.
He's a real talented performer, Tyrrell Hatton, there is no doubt about that, and he's just alluding to the fact that maybe he lets the frustration of the game get to him every now and then.
A lot of golfers do. It's how you deal with it. Yeah, they say he's a bit fiery. You can see he's a bit like a simmering kettle at times. If you don't learn how to deal with it, then it's going to get in the way of your career.
Do you need a little bit of that in your game or not?
Well, you do, but it depends whether it destroys you. You know, if you carry something for a couple of holes, when you chuck a bogey in, then you chuck another one in and a double in, then you've got a problem. I mean, Langer was the best I ever played with. He could shank it or stiff it, you didn't know. He never, ever got upset, banged his club, had a word with himself or anything. What had gone, had gone. He was dealing with the next thing. So if he has got issues in that department, he'll have to work on it.
John, we need the top 10 from the Omega European Masters.
Right, well, there were quite a few tied ninth. Richard Stirney, Andreas Romero, Tongtai Jiaidi, Ryan Fox, the Kiwi, Lucas Beergaard. And then sixth tied, a great week in the end for Lee Slattery, who started with a 75 and then went 62, 68, 66. He was tied with the defending champion Alex Noren and Darren Fickard. And fifth on his own was Mikko Elonen, who had a good final round 64. Then third tied, Fabrizio Zanotti, Tyrrell Hatton, second was Scott Hend, and the winner, Matthew Fitzpatrick.
A couple of other points of order. We must give a mention to Daniel Im first, who registered the 999th hole-in-one in European Tour history with an ace in his first round at the par 3 eighth.
I was just coming off from really bad lip-outs. I had two really bad lip-outs on 5 and 6. Six for an eagle. And then my caddy just kind of looked at me and said, something's got to happen. You know, you're hitting it good. You know, something's got to happen. And then it was just a perfect number. I hit my 7-iron really solid. Pitched just short, I think, where we wanted to. And it just rolled, trickled in.
Sweetly struck 999 on tour. Now, John, how many hole-in-ones?
On tour two, back-to-back weeks, actually. German Open and then the English Open.
Terrific stuff.
And I won nothing.
Did you not?
Well, you can't win nothing. I didn't get anything.
You didn't get anything? No. There wasn't a car up for grabs or a holiday in the Bahamas?
There was on another hole.
Oh,
I know.
What's wrong with you? Well, why don't you just pick the right one?
Bad clubbing.
Obviously. Let yourself down there. A quick word on Lee Westwood. A 500th European Tour start, kicked off with his champagne and cake on the first tee. Carded a 73, I think, on day one. He's had a terrific career, as we know, 23 European Tour wins, 43 worldwide. He's been a great servant to European golf.
Yeah, he has. And 500 is a milestone, isn't it? Bjorn, it happened with the week before at Denmark. So it's a fantastic achievement. There's very few got to 600. There are some, but of course Westwood, I expect to get to 600. He's still youngish man and he plays plenty of event, but 500 in the mountains, very nice place to do it in the mountains. Have you been to Kronstadt?
Do you know
yet?
I've never been to Kronstadt yet. Everyone tells me it's beautiful.
The train journey from Geneva to Sion.
See, I never had you down as a public transport man.
Oh, it's Mary Poppins stuff.
Oh, really?
Right along Lake Geneva.
I thought you'd be taxi Mercedes, and I'm not travelling on that.
No, wide gauge train, no screaming British children. It's lovely.
Fantastic. Remember to go to European Tour Twitter and Facebook pages to see the best shots of the week from the Omega European Masters. Fantasy Race 2 Dubai tips. Last week, Robert Lee and Jamie Spence populated the chairs in the voiceover booth here. Jamie went for Ross Fisher and Scott Hend. Ross missed the cut. Scott Hend was second. So good from Jamie Spence, John.
Well, yes, I'd throw him a mackerel, but I haven't got any.
Robert Lee, true to form, had Tommy Fleetwood, who missed the cut, and Miguel Angel Jimenez, who started well but eventually tied for 70th. That's about par the course for Mr. Lee, isn't it, I think?
Jimenez, brilliant. Led off to round when he's 53 now. He's so popular, though, still up in the mountains, like Seve was.
In the Fantasy Race to Dubai game, Emilio Garcia Ibanez has retaken the lead at the top of the overall standings, while Stuart Pickerel scored the most points this week after having the top three from the European Masters in his lineup. Meanwhile, in our Race to Dubai show mini league, one of our esteemed producers, Danny Garlick, registered the most points this week, while listener Neil Morrison is still atop the leaderboard. John, how's your team doing?
Slow.
Struggling.
Slow,
struggling.
I would say.
I note that you let AutoPick make your selections generally. You're not a man to sort of change your team very often, are
you? Not great with buttons.
No, I understand that. Remember to head to europeantour.com for their Fantasy 3 to watch at this week's KLM Open. We need the latest news in the Race to Dubai standings. John, the top 10.
Still led by Tommy Fleetwood from Sergio Garcia, John Rahm third, Rafa Cabrera Bayo fourth, Alex Noren fifth, Francesco Molinari sixth, Justin Rose seventh, Ross Fisher eighth, Rory McIlroy ninth, and Bernd Wiesberger tenth.
Speaking of Fleetwood, he and Andy Sullivan are the latest stars to have confirmed their participation in the British Masters supported by Sky Sports, which will be held at Close House in Northumberland later this month. Oscar Lengdon produced an outstanding closing display to clinch a maiden European Challenge Tour title in dramatic fashion at the Bridgestone Challenge at Luton Hoo Hotel. The Swede closed for a 62, which resulted in a 49-point total and 2-point win in what's a new format for the Challenge Tour this week. John, explain all to listeners. It's a modified Stableford scoring system.
Yes, it is. We actually played a similar thing on tour years ago. Anyway, what happens is you get no points for a par, minus one for a bogey, and minus three for double bogey or worse. But then if you make birdie, you get two, eagles five, and an albatross, which of course is a very rare bird, is 7 points. So 49 points over the tournament is very good scoring indeed. It rewards attacking golf. It's a different format. He shot 62 on the last day because Nikolai von Dellingshausen was leading after three. But, of course, he shoots 62 and then he had to wait to see if it was good enough. It was. It's nice to see they've mixed it up a little bit. You know, it is a modified Stableford scoring system. And as I say, we played it on tour.
Would you like to see it come back? There's one on the PGA Tour, isn't there?
I think I would, yeah. It'd be interesting because it does reward attacking golf. I mean, if you go birdie bogey, you get 1 point because it's two for a birdie and minus one for a bogey. Whereas if you just went par par, it'd be 0-0-0. So it lends these guys to attack. And 49 points over four rounds is, well, better than 12 points per round, isn't it? So he's making, if it's all in birdies, average of six birdies around. It won't because he'll have made eagles as well. But yeah, I think it's a good idea.
Something potentially we'll see on the main tour in the years to come. And on the European Senior Tour, Clark Dennis has secured his first title with victory at the Senior Italian Open presented by Villa Verde Resort. The American edged out Australia's Peter Fowler in a one-hole playoff after the final round of the tournament was abandoned due to bad weather.
Yeah, normally three rounds, yes, it was unfortunate. They had to shorten the 18th to a par three to get a playoff hole.
Waterlogged course, I believe. Yeah. And no events on the PGA Tour this week, so there's not that much change, if any, John, in the world rankings. How do the top 10 stand?
10 is Ricky Fowler, 9 Jason Day, 8 Sergio Garcia, 7 Henrik Stenson, 6 Rory McIlroy, 5 John Rahm, 4 Justin Thomas, 3 Hideki Matsuyama, 2 Jordan Spieth, and number 1, Dustin Johnson.
One other piece of news to mention, and the United States have regained the Walker Cup after beating Great Britain 19-7 at Los Angeles Country Club. It means 11 of the past 13 Walker Cups have been won by the home team, with Great Britain's last success in America coming back in 2001. John, you're a former Walker Cup player. Home advantage means everything, it would appear.
Yeah, I think, and obviously they're stronger, the USA team. It's the pinnacle of your amateur career, they say, to play Walker Cup. But they'll be feeling a little bit dejected. 2 years' time, there will be the next match, of course, on this side of the Atlantic. So hopefully they can perhaps get revenge. But they'll be licking the wounds a bit.
Happy memories for you, the Walker Cup. When did you play in it?
85 I played, yeah. We had a good team. Monty, Baker, Guildford.
Did you win?
I did. I beat...
You did? I thought it was a team game.
No, well, I managed to finish top point scorer. But we lost 13-11. which is a bit of a shame, around a place called Pine Valley in New Jersey. Fantastic golf course.
Moving on, time to cast our eyes over this week's tournament now and the KLM Open in the Netherlands, a seemingly permanent fixture in the European Tour schedule. It returns to the Dutcher Golf Club, 20 kilometres east of Rotterdam, where home favourite Joost Luiten was a popular winner in 2016. Tell us a little bit more about the venue. Fairly new, isn't it?
Yeah, designed by Monty. Flattish golf course, very well bunkered and sculptured, really. They've had to move an awful lot of turf. I thought it was one of the best courses, new courses, I've ever seen when I went to it last year. And as I said, designed by Monty. They had an interesting thing on 14 where they got the amateurs involved, playing with the pros on a kind of a challenge. They qualified to do it. They put stands around it a little bit like 16 at the Waste Management in Phoenix. But it's brilliant. I've always enjoyed the Dutch Open. Used to love playing in it. But this golf course is an absolute cracker.
It must be different to where they used to play because they used to switch between a couple of courses. One was quite linksy at the time.
Well, there's a lot of links courses, Noordwijk, Hilversum, Kennema, all on the coastal side. This is more inland. But what a job they've done because it's flat land around there. They moved everything to build it and the quality of grass on there. And the guy who's heavily involved in it, Alan Saddington, Scottish golf professional who moved over there, got some people together, created this thing, Monty designed it. Honestly, it's a belter.
It's not the longest, though. What sort of skill set...
It's long enough.
What sort of skill set do golfers need to win around there?
Well, the greens are quite interesting. They're fairly undulated. They're fair. You've got to hit it in the right places. A little bit of water on the golf course. 17's a great par 4, 18 a good par 5 to finish with. You've got to hit it straight. Quite a few dog legs on it, but if they took the pins away, I expect the golf course to be not overly firm at this time of the year. It gets a little bit of breeze on it, but it's always in mint condition. I mean, last year you wouldn't have thought it was a new golf course. It's absolutely pure, it was.
Joost Luiten, we mentioned already, there's always a lot of pressure on him because he's the local favourite, but he rises to the challenge, doesn't he?
Well, he's won it twice, and he nearly won it as an amateur. I think when Ross Fisher won it in about 2008... that was a brilliant last year, his victory. It'd be like a major to him to win your national title. And, of course, he'd be back defending. He's not my pick this week, which we'll probably get on to. But, everybody's going to have a great time. I hope the weather's good.
Lee Westwood, fresh off his 500th tour start, goes 5-0-1. Porrig Harrington tees up ahead of his defence in Portugal next week. Ernie Els is playing as well. Yep. There's some big players performing. It's a good field.
Yeah, it is a good field and a chance, obviously, for someone to perhaps change the career because it's top 100 that keep the card this year. There's a few lads needing a good week. Tournaments are running out and hopefully some of them are going to prevail, but it'll be very competitive.
Ross Fisher missed the last couple of cuts, but he was in rare form earlier this season and maybe a win is around the corner for Ross.
Well, he's doing well in the race to Dubai. Again, another class player. You can have a couple of rough weeks and then suddenly pop up. Ross could get it done round here. He's got the game. He's long. And at times that will be an advantage, really.
Got to mention George Kurtse, a talented performer, had one or two injury issues. Of course, we've seen a lot of South Africans play well and win events on the European Tour recently.
Yeah, we have. Kurtse, for me, is an underachiever. Sterney's playing. I think he's won 5 times, Sterney. Great player. There's a lot of good South African players. Kurtse probably should have won more.
So we've mentioned at least one or two that I'm sure will be towards the top of the leaderboard come Sunday afternoon, but we need a couple of picks, John. Who are you going for this week? Give us a main player and maybe an outsider to follow.
I'm going for Thomas Detry from Belgium.
You lot love Thomas Detry. All the ex-pros tell me he's the next big thing. Why?
Well, he's got a lot of potential. I watched him practice a lot here at the Dutch last year. He was alongside Thomas Peters. Tremendous player. And my outsider is Chris Hansen, the Englishman. I think at some stage he will win. He started out on the Euro Pro Tour, come through the Challenge Tour, and now here he is out on the main tour. And he's had a lot of good finishes. Not so much an outsider, but he's my second pick.
OK, I'm going to go for Fabrizio Zanotti, who comes into this week off the back of third place in Switzerland and a third place on the South American Tour as well in Paraguay. So he's my main pick because obviously he's playing well at the minute. And for my outsider, I'm going to go for Aaron Rye, who, of course, won multiple times on the Challenge Tour. He's been upped to the main tour. He's played well in a couple of events so far, and I expect him to go well this week.
Good luck.
Well, that is your lot for now. Next week, we'll review events in the Netherlands and also look ahead to the Portugal Masters, where Porrick Harrington is set to defend his crown. Until then, you can stay up to date with the latest news from the European Tour via Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, and Instagram. And do leave us a review if you're downloading the podcast from iTunes. But for now, from John Hawksworth...
Enjoy the Dutch Open.
And myself, Dan Roebuck, it is goodbye. We'll see you next time.